should be.
Paying attention, Gordon.
It isn't that, okay, alright.
Okay, good morning, today's Friday, April 15th, 2016, and the time is 8 a.m. We have a quorum of the Audit Committee, and I now call this meeting of the Audit Committee of the Finance Commission of Texas to order pursuant to Chapter 551 of the Government Code. So our first agenda item is the review and approval of the minutes of February 19th, 2016 Audit Committee meeting. These minutes were circulated to the members in the agenda packet. Anybody have any corrections to those minutes?
No.
Okay, do I hear a motion to approve the minutes of the Finance Commission Audit Committee meeting held on February 19th, 2016?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it, and the motion passes. So, Leslie, do you discuss your...
Yes.
Okay.
So the next item on the agenda, I guess, is the Audit Committee review of agencies' activities, and the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner report is on page 5, and it lists there are no, currently there are no outstanding audit items, so there's no pending items for prior audits, but it's a busy audit season, so just to make the committee aware of what's coming, we've just completed field work on a DPS audit, and we're corresponding with them regarding some initial findings. We have an FBI audit later this month. Both of those audits relate to our handling of criminal history record information. We have an audit by the State Office of Risk Management coming up in May. And that's over our human resources policies and practices. And then Garza Gonzalez and Associates, who is our internal auditor, will be performing the field work for an audit related to our motor vehicle sales finance examination function. And that's also scheduled for May. So it's busy season coming up. So you'll see more at the June meeting from us. And that's all I have on that issue.
Okay, Madam Chair, on page 6 would be the Texas Department of Banking. We do have, are reporting no outstanding audit issues. Much like Commissioner Pettijohn, Garza Gonzalez is doing their IT exam. It's being done now, and the records management audit will begin the week of the 18th of this month. DPS is doing their audit, and the FBI will be doing the same in May. Also like to report kind of I'm not sure if it's unusual, but the state auditor has notified us that they will be coming in and auditing the banking department. And this is, I think, relative to the SDSI issue to see if we're doing the right thing. So it might be the first time that they've come in to do this. And then in the June meeting, the committee will have to look at the Garza Gonzalez contract to determine if we're going to go forward with them or put out an RFP or both. And that's all we have.
Okay. Savings and Mortgage Lending, page 7. We have no current outstanding audit issues. We, too, have a Garza Gonzalez audit upcoming, and it will be on the IT area.
So, thank you for that. The next item is the discussion and possible vote to recommend that the Finance Commission take action on the agency's February 29th investment officer report.
Okay, and on the rotation, the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner is first today, so I'll be first on all these issues that relate to all of us. So, the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner report begins on page 9. I thought I would just introduce the two funds that we have as part of this investment report. First is the Residential Mortgage Loan Originator Recovery Trust Fund. This is a fund that's created by the Finance Code. It's authorized at 341.602 of the Finance Code. And each mortgage loan originator that's licensed by the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner pays a recovery fund fee that's deposited into this fund as part of their license renewal and so on and so forth and the application. So the existence of this particular recovery fund substitutes for some surety bond requirements. Proceeds of this fund are intended to be used for redress for consumers who are harmed by mortgage loan originators who may have acted in violation of the statute. Our population of mortgage loan originators that we license is fairly small, so the corresponding fund is fairly small as well. Activity on the fund is just routine activity, so there's not really much to report except for those transfer out, which is going to be transferred back in. And that's really the only activity on page 9. Page 10 is a larger fund. This is the Texas Financial Education Endowment Fund, which is created and authorized under Section 393.628 of the Finance Code. And so this particular endowment fund is supported by annual assessments from the credit access businesses. And they pay an assessment each year as part of their renewal that goes towards this fund. Earnings on this fund can be used to support financial education and capability, which is administered through a grant program, and we'll have a little report on that a little bit later in the agenda of the audit committee. These particular investments are managed by the Texas Treasury Safekeeping Trust Company, and actually those folks were here. They made a presentation to the commission at the last meeting in February to talk about sort of their portfolio allocation and some of their strategies and so on and so forth. But this particular fund is invested in the same manner as the other endowment funds, of which there are 12 that Safekeeping Trust manages, that's under managed by them. This particular one is just a teeny portion of the overall $3.5 billion endowment portfolio that they manage. So you'll see the report again on page 10. There's some fairly large additions that happened in the second quarter because we went through this renewal cycle, so those are sitting in cash. We have to make fairly large investments, so we tend to hold a fair amount in cash because most of the investments are sort of permanent investments for the endowment, but we'll be making another installment investment in the third quarter, and you'll see, I mean, it was a kind of a difficult market quarter for the market and for the fund in the second quarter, but hopefully things are looking a little better in the third quarter, so we'll see. But you'll see the final balance at February 29th was about $3.4 million total in that fund. And I'll be happy to answer any questions on that.
I just have one. So is our funds are part of a larger fund, so we get our pro rata share. It's not like we have individual investments, correct?
Correct.
It's part of a fund.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, Madam Chair, on the trust-funded prepaid funeral guarantee fund report starts on page 11. I'd like to ask Deputy Commissioner Newberg to go over this and give you a little background.
Hi, Stephanie Newberg, Texas Department of Banking. The two funds that we have are on pages 11 and 12, and it's the trust-funded guarantee fund and the insurance-funded guarantee fund. And these funds were enacted, the trust in 1987 and the insurance in 2009 by the legislature, to guarantee performance by sellers of prepaid funeral benefit contracts. This legislation resulted from funeral homes going out of business and there being no one to honor the funeral contract or defalcations by management. Our two funds are not under the Government Code's Public Funds Investment Act, but we try to mirror and follow that act as much as possible. These funds are actually overseen by a Guarantee Fund Advisory Council, and they set the investment policy as well as approve and review the activity for the funds. But we also provide them to you for your review as well. What you don't have this meeting is funds that are seized funds. We don't have any seized funds right now, but when we have seized funds, they will come to you as well, and they are only under your review and guidance. Our Guarantee Fund Advisory Council consists of three members who meet at least annually. Two are from the industry and one is a consumer member, and you actually appoint the members to the Guarantee Fund. How these two funds are funded is a dollar is collected from the sellers every time a new contract is sold until the funds reach $1 million. On page 11, you'll see that we are over the million and have been over the million for at least the last 15 years, so there's been no assessments to the industry. The activity for this fund, the trust funded on page 11, the other additions or other deductions first, is really for claims that we are paying out on behalf of families that lost their prepaid funeral contract funds. The additions are restitution that we are receiving based on orders from these funeral homes that had the defalcation and under a restitution order with the department are paying it back over a period of time. And that fund is at $1 million, so we don't do any more assessments. Page 12 is our newer insurance fund that started only in 2009, and so it doesn't really have as much activity yet. We have yet to have a claim on the insurance funded area. And the other additions there are the dollar per contract that for 2015 activity. The annual reports are due in the February-March timeframe, so in the next report you'll see another addition. I think we'll probably have close to $45,000 as a deposit for the year. And so these assessments will go on until this fund reaches $1 million as well. And we're invested in overnight repos with the Treasury safekeeping, and then we also have CDs. And I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Savings and mortgage lending begins on page 13, and our Director of Finance and Administration, Antonio Antov, will give this report.
Good morning. Our recovery trust fund is very similar to the fund that Office of Consumer Credit has. We collect fees from new licensees that add to the fund, and the fund is available to consumers that have been harmed by residential mortgage loan originators. Our fund is capped at $3.5 million. Right now it's at $3.8 million, and it's considered evergreen at this point. We don't have a lot of activity as far as payouts go. On page 13 is the list of CDs that we have put the funds into. We maintain some amount in safekeeping trust for ongoing payments, but we haven't had a payment this year yet. So
I wanted to add to that. I had talked some about this fund yesterday with the new members, but just to as a refresher, when this fund was originally created under the statute, the claimants went to court, got a judgment, and then came to the department and were able to ask for not only their actual costs but attorney's fees as well. So those payouts were much larger because the attorney's fees tended to be large. And I believe it was 11, the statute changed, and now they come directly to us without a judgment, and the only statutory payment we can make out of the fund is for actual costs. So the numbers of claims have gone down, and the amount of the claims have gone down significantly. Now, the purpose of the fund is to have it there if it's needed, and it's restricted funds, only can be used as the statute allows. So it's there for when things are pretty good right now, but there will be a time when things aren't so good and bad things happen to applicants for loans, and then the fund is there.
Are more funds being put into
it? Oh, yes. Okay, so let me back up. Originally, that the statute says fees or payments into the fund are not to exceed $20. Originally, the department required about a $20 fee for new licenses and for renewals, which is statutorily allowed. A few years ago, we changed that. So now new licensees pay a $10 fee, pay into the fund for $10 so that they have some ownership in that fund. We have waived that requirement for renewals, and I've continued that wave and expect to do so for the foreseeable future. So.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any questions?
Okay, do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the agency's February 29th, 2016 investment officer reports?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it and the motion passes. All right, next we have discussion of impossible vote to recommend that the Finance Commission take action on the agency's 2016 second quarter financial statements.
Okay, thank you. The Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner report begins on page 15. So This is our second quarter of the fiscal year ending February 29th, so you'll see the report here on our operating statement and the budget analysis. So revenues were ahead of target. We're at about 115% of budget. We have a little bit of that is due to timing, but mostly due to we exceeded our target in regulated lenders. We retained a higher percentage of those lenders through renewal than we expected, and we've had a little bit of increase in license activity in that area, more so than we expected. Also, there's a penalties that we've collected. A lot of those, 64% of those actually relate to folks who have had to pay, who have paid late filing fees. There's certain benefits to them licensing to get some retroactive status on licenses, and so they elect to pay those late licensing fees to get that retroactive status, and so we've received at least 64% of that number relates simply to those. And that's probably the significant items on revenues. Then for expenditures, we're running at about 80% of our budget expenditures right now. Sometimes, again, there's some timing. Not all accruals are necessarily, I mean, there's accruals in here, but sometimes we have some timing, definitely some issues that are timed into the third and fourth quarter. Our salary and wages are under budget. Somewhat, we're running about 90% there. We definitely intended some particular hirings. We were going to wait until second and third quarter to stage those hirings. And in fact, we've got a new class of examiners. We'll talk a little bit more later when we get in the meeting about that. But so that is predictable and expected. But we've had a little bit more turnover, so that number is a little bit larger than I guess we'd hoped. But and the travel is correspondingly also behind, but we've also been able to save some, create some efficiencies, and we've created some savings in travel due to some types of examination scheduling. And then the last item I guess I want to mention is the development in progress. This is an IT project that we're beginning, and so that's kicking off in the third quarter, so that's another timing issue. Moving from there on to page 17 is a report on our changes in our fund balance. That we prepare for the commission and report. This is consistent with the expectation. There's the number of months of available cash balance for future operations is within the target of the 2 to 6 months. This tends to be a high point for our agency in terms of cash flow because we've just gone through some of the major renewals, and so that's kind of where we are in terms of cash flow. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Sammy, come forward, please. Madam Chair, if I could mention, as indicated by Commissioner Pettijohn, each agency has $5 million that we hold in reserve for the building, and we will be talking about the building status a little bit later, but just to point that out. Sammy, introduce yourself.
Good morning. Sammy Chadley, Department of Banking. I'm going to go over our second quarter financials. So on page 19 is our operating statement for the period ending February 2016. For the second quarter, revenues represented 99.8% of budget, and our year-to-date revenues represented 99.7% of our budget. On the expenditure side, expenditures were at 97.8% of budget for the quarter, and then for year-to-date, for 6 months, expenditures were at 97.1% of budget. On page 20, and basically what that is an overview of our budget variances for the second quarter, and we look at variances in excess of 1,005% from budget. So I'm going to go over a couple of items. The first one is non-bank regulation on the revenue side. Our actual revenues were higher than budgeted due to unanticipated penalties of approximately $79,000 collected from unlicensed money services businesses. There were three companies that were assessed 99% of those penalties. The second item is the last item, other operating, and we do have a negative variance, and that is due to utilizing more State of Michigan resources than expected for a Comerica Bank targeted examination. Are there any questions so far? No?
Just Sammy, would you go into, it shows on the budget that we're operating, we're showing a deficit. And could you mind explaining that? Well, I'll start, and you correct me if I'm wrong. So when we did the budget, we had anticipated that we would have an assessment increase on our bank assessments, but it had not been approved yet. So we went ahead and showed our expenditures as we wanted to, projected them to be, but we only showed the revenues predicated on our old assessment method. So the new assessment was approved after our budget was approved, and the assessment, Bob, kicked in
March
1st. So we should, the revenue should catch up with expenses.
Okay, on page 21, that is our cash flow statement. For this quarter, our cash reserves are we're at 3.37 months. Last quarter's were at 3.57 months, so virtually unchanged between last quarter and this quarter. Are there any questions?
So let me mention one thing, say just for background. Commissioner Pettijohn mentioned it, but so we have 3.37 months of extra working capital, if you will. And when we did our value, I think the Government Finance Office Association recommends 2 to 6 months, I believe if that's correct. And so we went in, and each agency did this, we went in and did an analysis to determine, you know, what if one of our big banks, for instance, sold, or God forbid, converted to another charter. And we wanted to make sure we had the working capital in order to last a certain period before we had to go back and make a major restructure on our operating program. So that's the intent for the, and we feel like at 3.37 we're fine.
I have one question. You said that the other difference was due to having more Michigan examiners for Comerica than anticipated. Mm-hmm. Do we pay those examiners? How does that work?
Yes, we pay
them. Yes, and it works both ways. We have, I don't remember now how many states our banks are operating, 12 states, I believe, and then we have other states. BBVA, for instance, it's chartered out of Alabama that operate in Texas. So if an agency doing, the home agency is doing an examination request, states help from the states that their branches in, we cooperate in that, and we have an agreement that allows us to do that. Kind of a mutual aid type program.
In as much as the assessment increase of 2015 that kicked in March of this year, what percentage was that increase, and how long had it been since we had an increase?
Let me ask the Deputy Commissioner Bob Bacon if he could speak to that. Bob?
Right. Overall, it was a 12% except for the larger institutions, and it was 14 for those.
And we tiered it where the smaller institutions may not have received an increase, and the largest of the institutions had a little bit more. And it was 12 years since the last assessment increase. We talked about it with the audit committee and with the finance commission. We really didn't want to do this, but we felt like we had to do it. We sent it out to the banks, and we got strong support. Well, let's put it this way. We got strong support from the trade groups, strong support from the banks that we specifically contacted, and then we had no negative impact on it. Nobody complained. I think everybody felt like that they understood why we needed to do this.
Commissioner Jones?
Yes, starting on page 23, Antonio Antoff is going to come give the report.
Our report starts on page 23, and this is our financial statement for the quarter. lines, but I welcome any questions. Our revenues are 29% over budget, and this is mostly due to very high penalties that we've had for unlicensed activities. We budgeted minimal amount only for penalties that we know we're going to assess, but the rest has not been budget, so that's why the big deviation. Our license renewals were pretty much on target. The budgeted amount, we're over only 7.6%. Our expenditures are 90% of budget, and mostly this is due to vacancies. It's the market in Austin for jobs is booming, so we've had a hard time filling our positions. It's a lot of competition with the private companies. Our other personnel costs are over budget, and this is due to lump sum termination amounts that were paid out that were not budgeted, and this is lump sum termination sums are when somebody separates from the department. We pay out their annual vacation that's not eaten, that's been not being used, so we have to pay it out. And, you know, people with a lot of state service have a lot of a lot of vacation accrued, so, and this is not an item that we can predict. Our travel is under budget. This is mostly due to travel savings and some examinations being done remotely. And this is pretty much all the big items. Our cash report is on page 25, and currently we're at 12.2 months of cash reserves, and this is our highest point of the year because we just completed renewals, and that's going to go down the third and the fourth quarter.
And I want to make a little more comment about that. So what we, the bulk of our revenue comes at one period of the year. And so in that time period, we have one thrift assessment. All the licensees renew at that same time, or they reinstate between January and February. So at this point, the high majority of our revenue has come in. And so now what we see is it starts to level out and be less because we'll have our expenditures but not as much revenue coming in. The revenue we know we will get in, but we don't know how many, is we get an average of 600 application submissions a month, and each of those application submissions brings a fee, but of course we don't have control over how many come or not. But, so we will continue to get some regular revenue through the daily process, but the fell swoop bulk is over.
Okay, do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the agency's 2016 second quarter financial statements?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it and the motion passes. Is there a report on activities related to the Texas Financial Education Endowment Fund?
Yes. I'd like to call on Juan Garcia to give us a report on the TP fund.
We might need to create a document for new members of common acronyms. So we might start now with TP, since they won't know what TP is, but
it's the Texas Financial Education Endowment.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members, commissioners, members of the public. What you have before you is a compilation of stories and just the history of the eight recipients that were awarded 2 years ago, aggregate amount of $250,000. And so this is our first report, and you know we're very excited to present this because it really shows how the state was able to make an impact in Texas throughout the last 2 years, particularly, like I said, financial education. Now, I won't go through every detail of this report. I'll leave that for your perusal at your convenience. But I do want to point to page 12, if I may, and just like to talk a little bit about St. Vincent de Paul, which is one of our recipients. And what they did was take $30,000 that Finance Commission awarded to them and created a micro loan program, loan conversion program. And so what they did was They partnered up with a local credit union and gave out small loans to individuals who had existing prior loans with credit access businesses. And so they were able to pay off those higher interest loans, and they started building a relationship. The end result is to build a relationship with a credit institution, because I think part of the reason that they weren't able to have this lower access interest loans was because they didn't have an established credit, or they were just not able to qualify. And so after the programs ended, you know, they have a summary here that they gave out 16 loans. There were six incentives given, about $600 in incentives paid, and you know, they were able to help 15 total clients participate in financial literacy courses. So although the number may be small, it makes a great impact in a family. And so, you know, just know that those $30,000 went a long, long way.
So one, is there a way to make that sort of program transferable to other
Yes.
enterprises? And what process is there that we could do that?
Well, for us, we could reach out to them and help them establish that through others, but we don't have to do that at this point because others have noticed this. And so St. Vincent de Paul has sort of become the model for this type of program. And as a matter of fact, yesterday I was over at the Catholic Charities fundraiser, and the president is a good friend of mine, and he said he wanted to start something like this without even knowing about the specifics of this, and said, you know, I hear other things are happening, and I said, well, St. Vincent de Paul, and so somehow the word is getting around. And I will meet with him soon to begin to plan, you know, this type of venture with him.
There are several other different programs that are taking off, not just this one, but and we're seeing them, folks are looking at how to replicate them. We have some that are licensed entities that are just really competing in the market. This is a little different one that they were trying to deal with people, I think, who were, you know, in trouble, that were having difficulty with the sustained use of the product. But in terms of just a different competitive access to capital, we're seeing a number of different programs. And we've highlighted a few of those in some prior reports in our 2015 availability and access to financial services. But we're seeing more and more of that. So we're trying to study some of these innovative programs and see how they can be replicated.
So, you know, great programs hidden under a bushel basket
right.
don't do a lot of good. So
right.
having some formalized way to make these, you know, and there are bound to be a number of social service agencies
yes.
who could take on that task, but I'd hate to see us be successful on a one-off and it be a one-off.
Right. So that's, good point. And one of the things, may mention, or it's in this report anyway, so one of the grantees were actually requested more routine communication amongst themselves because they're trying to share best practices and how can they spread the word, which I thought was a really kind of a neat outcome of this process, that they want to be able to share those best practices and spread the word. So
if I don't want to impose too much work on you, but if there is, if there is a way to do follow-up, stakes in the ground, you know, periodic reporting and on a 6-month or yearly basis to show how this may have spread or if it hasn't spread, identify why not.
Well, you know, it's easy to ask for reports when we've got a carrot hanging over their head, and you know, the compliance will certainly be there. While I'm not saying it is impossible, we will certainly reach out to them and see how they are able to comply moving forward.
And
now,
it may not be you, Juan. I mean, it may
no.
be, you know, the other social service, you know, maybe Catholic Charities in every venue can take on that responsibility, or somebody else.
Well, you know, again, just speaking to Catholic Charities, they want to implement this program, and you know, they touch a lot of lives, and this is just Central Texas. So I will safely assume that once this program is successful within their organization, that they're going to try and, you know, reach out to others. Now, keep in mind that in order for this program to work, you must have a credit union that is willing to participate. And so it's not just them going out and say, we want to do this. We've got to make sure that, you know, they're the ones with the lending license.
Mm-hmm.
And to Paul's point, maybe what you might do is, I'm sure you've gathered email addresses of all the various parties that have applied or been interested or inquired. Maybe you could create a press release once you determine that it's been something successful and do some kind of blast email.
As well, I'm happy to say that we've hired our new financial education specialist, and she's got an ample experience in that. I will bring her next time once she starts working. But some of the things that she's done is working for an engineering firm that does this type of outreach, particularly with the MOPAC improvement project. And so she's got that experience to reach out to folks, to talk to the community, and inform them of the things that are happening.
How does it work? So we gave them $30,000. Do they, St. Vincent de Paul, do they actually go and make the loan to the individual and then transfer it over to the credit union? Or, I mean, what was the money actually used for?
So it's on a reimbursement basis, and the money is given back. I mean, the credit union is ultimately the one who has the money. They're not, St. Vincent de Paul is not the lender.
Okay.
But they're sort of like the third party to make it happen.
Well, this is developing the program.
Yes.
And
so they're facilitating it.
And
yes.
The administration of the program, and yeah.
Okay.
Did St. Paul identify the participants?
Probably.
I don't remember.
No.
Do you anticipate giving additional money to the same grantees?
We didn't for the second round. Grant Advisory Committee.
For the benefit of the new members, you might just explain in a very brief nutshell what the program is and how old it is.
I got it. I read it.
Okay, good.
I know what it is. I'm just curious.
No, we did not. The group felt that it was important to reach out to others as well, and we saw this as being seed money for them. They're off and running. Let's do the same for another group.
Thanks.
I just have one question. It's probably not for you. It's probably for either Charles or Caroline. Are there concerns from depository institutions about making those sorts of loans? I mean, credit unions do it. Seem to me they have the same or similar insurance rules that you have in terms of credit worthiness of borrowers and that sort of thing. So why is it credit unions?
Well, I'm going to make a general statement. So for a bank, as an example, they do have certain obligations for community reinvestment, and they can assign an amount of funds to be able to do that, which would maybe not meet the normal credit quality standard, but would be low enough where it's not significant to the health of the organization. I'm going to assume that credit unions do that also, but
The rest of the report just focuses on some of the other recipients and just some of the stories that they were able to share with us and the feedback as far as their first year or their first run at our program. And so we've taken these measures, and you know, we're certainly going to look back and learn from them and improve the project as we move forward with the following recipients. I'd be happy to answer any other questions you may have.
Juan, if you would just address why it is credit union participation that's involved with this for the benefit of everybody.
Why is credit union?
Versus a bank.
Well, I'm not exactly sure, to be quite honest with you. I think part of it is just they may have had a board member that was on St. Vincent de Paul, and that may have just, you know, what may have sparked the interest of saying, hey, you know, I'll talk to my folks. Let's do it. But I think part of, you know, just being a bank is that the loan's guaranteed. And so there's really not necessarily a risk for them to make these loans to somebody who may default on it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Juan, thanks for pulling this report together. This will be interesting to read. I appreciate it.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Any other discussion? Good. No actions necessary there. There being no further business, the meeting of the Audit Committee of the Finance Commission of Texas is now adjourned, and it's 8:40. Thank you.